Good morning, and I'd like to welcome everyone here to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is February 8th, 2021, and it's the first committee of this legislative session. I'd like to welcome committee members, Senator Rivak, welcome. Senator Holland, welcome. Senator Stevens is on his way, and Senator Gray Jackson, welcome.
Thank you.
It's really quite an honor to be chairing this committee, and welcome, Senator Stevens. It's great to have you on the committee. I'm Senator Mia Costello. The time is 1:35, and I'd also like to thank the recording secretary, Carrie, our LIO operator, Carson, and Katie McCall, the Labor and Commerce Committee aide, for this afternoon's meeting. Today, we plan on hearing two bills, Senate Bill 10, introduced by Senator Begich, followed by Senate Bill 24, introduced by Senator Wilson. It's my intention for Senate Bill 10, which is, this is the first hearing. We will have invited testimony, open it up for a public hearing, and the intention today is to close public testimony and then move the bill out of committee. Senator Begich, I want to thank you for allowing me to add this committee as a committee of referral, because I thought it was important for us to get some Department of Labor and Workforce Development testimony just to lay the ground, partly as an education for the committee and also to provide some background for your bill. But before we get into your testimony, I would like to ask Senator Rivak to make a motion so that we can appoint Senator Holland as Vice Chair of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Rivak?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senator Holland be appointed Vice Chair of the Senate Labor and Affairs, Labor and Commerce Committee.
Thank you, and seeing no objection, Senator Holland, congratulations, you are now Vice Chair of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Begich, please feel free to introduce your bill and introduce your aide for the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again for the opportunity to testify before the committee and to present SB 10, the Free and Reduced Tuition for Essential Workers Act that we are proposing. I will introduce, on my left is Lukey Gail Tobin, who's my legislative assistant, who's helped in a lot of the preparation on this bill. And with that, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I'd like to go right into just talking a little bit about the sponsor statement, some opening remarks, and then switch it over to a sectional analysis. Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Begich. I am the state senator for District J. I got to get back into the habit of saying that, remembering to say that. And District J is downtown Anchorage. During this unprecedented time, thousands of Alaskans have remained steadfast. They've supported us with their commitment to our communities in doing jobs that put them at risk on a daily basis, whether it's restocking grocery shelves, to delivering medicine, from hauling away our trash, to continuing to care for the most vulnerable among us. Essential workers have provided the critical support for our community that we have needed during this pandemic. Now is the time for us to recognize those efforts and invest in this ready and able workforce. SB 10 establishes an essential worker grant program, leveraging the dedication of our frontline workers and providing a tuition-free pathway for them to enhance and grow their professional capacity. I might add, it is a time-limited program, specifically meant not to be continuing, but to be an acknowledgement of this time, this very unique time that we are in right now. Madam Chair, according to the U.S. Department of Labor, rising levels of education attainment correlate to a 14% increase in output per hour worked in the private sector. In fact, data shows that the typical college graduate working full-time pays more than 80% in local, state, and federal taxes. In our case, of course, that would be local and federal taxes that would be benefiting from this. We also know that typical high school graduates, when they have that opportunity to succeed, continue to become a positive element of our society, productive citizens that stay away from our service, our support systems, our education, our substance use systems, our criminal justice systems. Investing in our essential workers will make Alaska more competitive, reduce strain on government financial assistance programs, reduce crime rates, and increase tax revenue and wages. Research indicates that an overwhelming 93% of employees would stay at their companies longer if the company invested in their development. With declining population rates affecting all of Alaska, investing in our essential workforce will keep Alaskans here, working hard to stabilize, strengthen, and build back our economy. I would say just a few things about what the act truly does and who it affects. So on March 27th, 2020, Governor Dunleavy and the Commissioner of Health and Social Services issued a state health mandate. It's attached in our packet as Attachment A, but if you look at Roman numeral 2A in there, 2E, it lists a number of the sectors that have provided essential services. Some people have called my office saying, why aren't you saying frontline workers? We use the word essential services because our legislative legal tells us that that is the appropriate term to use, and it matches that Attachment A. If I could just guide you to that attachment, it's the one that's titled at the top, Alaska Essential Services and Critical Workforce Infrastructure Order, formerly Attachment A, amended April 10, 2020. If you look at Roman numeral 2 exemptions for essential services and critical infrastructure, then you go down to E, which is on the next page at the top. It lists each of the areas which would be then eligible for this. I would say that we often don't see the results. Of one thing that was brought to my attention by you, Madam Chair, earlier today, and which is covered under this bill, much to my surprise, or would be covered under this bill, is that, of course, tellers had to deal with us because federal law requires banks to be left open. And so those banks, for the most part, remained open. I must have used teller services probably at least 60 or 70 times since this pandemic has begun. And that whole process, of course, is something that you wouldn't normally think of. But they're also some of our least paid workers. Finally, I'm conscious of the time, I want you to know that even recent reports from the Federal Reserve, which I got in my First National Bank of Alaska mailing recently. I don't know if you took time to read the mailing that they send. They send a quarterly economic report, but I want to read. May I permission to read directly from that report?
Of course, Senator Begich.
The negative economic consequences of COVID-19 have fallen disproportionately upon low-wage workers. Now, this is from First National Bank of Alaska reporting on the Federal Reserve. The employment rate for low-wage workers is down by about 25% compared with January 2020. In contrast, the employment rate for high-wage workers has fully recovered and now stands about 1% higher compared with January 2020. I want to repeat those numbers, Madam Chair. 25% lower for low-wage workers, which this bill would disproportionately impact support. Why that matters is you can't have opportunity if you're never given the chance for it. This COVID epidemic had a disproportionate impact on those least able to carve a path for their own future. So that's why I think it's essential. With that, Madam Chair, there are a number of questions you may have about the bill. There are others online to testify, but if there are no questions for me right now, I'd switch to a sectional analysis, but happy to answer any questions there may be.
Does the committee have any questions for the bill sponsor?
If I might add, Madam Chair.
Senator Begich.
Senator Begich, for the record. Senator Stevens and Senator Holland are on the next committee of referral, and there's a lot of technical changes and things like that. I would hope to, if we have the opportunity for a hearing, to be able to share those with you and add those at that time. But some of those may come up in discussion of the bill, and if so, I'll address them as they come up. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And if we could go ahead with a sectional, please.
For the record, my name is Lukey Gail Tobin with the Office of Senator Begich. I'll be providing a sectional analysis of SB 10. Section 1 establishes an essential worker grant program as new uncodified law of the state of Alaska. This section also directs the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to establish an undergraduate tuition grant program for essential workers. These essential workers must be Alaskan residents who were employed at the start of or during the declared federal public health emergency as of January 31st, 2020. This section also includes a comprehensive listing of occupations that qualify as essential for the purpose of this grant program. Section 1 also provides eligibility requirements for essential workers, including current or laid-off employment status, post-secondary enrollment status, with a requirement that the applicant has less than 90 post-secondary education credits, an Alaska residency requirement, a provision that states the applicant must have a high school diploma or equivalency completion, and have completed a federal student aid application. Section 1 also includes language on how the recipient must maintain grant program eligibility, including maintaining a 2.0 grade point minimum, make satisfactory progress in their progression, and maintain their enrollment status. Section 1 also directs the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to establish policies and procedures for application and admission into the program, which will also include establishing an evaluation of program efficacy. Section 2 establishes an essential worker grant program report as new uncodified law of the state of Alaska and directs the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to submit the report to the Alaska State Legislature on or before December 31st. Section 3 repeals Section 1 on the date of expiration or cancellation of the Declaration of Federal Public Health Emergency. And Section 4 sets a repeal date of January 1st, 2025 for Section 2, the Essential Worker Grant Program, as operated by the Alaska Commission for Post-Secondary Education.
Thank you. Are there any questions of committee members following the sectional? Thank you, Loki. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Begich, for the record, a couple of things I'll bring up on the financing issues of this. In discussions with the Commission on Post-Secondary Education and others, it is our hope that we would use resources from the Higher Education Endowment Fund to fund this program. That would be the ideal situation. We had to estimate the number based on what we know of has been the case in one of the other states that has adopted this. So, for example, the state of Michigan adopted this program. Less than 1% of those eligible applied, and that less than 1% of its population applied. And of that less than 1%, fully half of those were joining because of a high school element of the program. So we're considering, we opted for the high end here, but we expect it'll be closer to the low end of those that would apply. It's our intent in the next committee of referral to set a hard date for application instead of when an order might expire, and that hard date will likely be December 31st of 2021 or later this current year. Because if you don't have a hard date, it creates, I think, a little bit of ambiguity about the program. It would mean that if you applied in 2021 for the program because you were eligible, having worked in during an emergency order, that you could have up to 4 years, and that's why the repealer kicks in when the repealer kicks in, because at that point you wouldn't have any need for the grant program any longer because it will have achieved the goal of those who've applied for the program. So with that, Madam Chair, I just, you know, that's the most complex, I think, part of it. I'm trying to always find ways to apply the right funding source so we're not going after what's called UGF or the undesignated general fund monies. And so the higher education endowment money appears to be the appropriate vehicle for this. I would also add that we may also find, and we don't know this yet, that federal resources that are unallocated coming into the state for education purposes could also potentially fund this, and we're used to fund the program in Michigan. And so that is another option that's out there should we adopt this program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions of committee members? I actually have a question, Senator Begich. So I'm looking at this list, and one that strikes me or sticks out is a grocery store worker. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, this list of essential workers, if they then enroll in school, they won't be able to perform those duties. And I'm curious about the intention of the legislation. Was it to reward people that we've been relying on to get us through this unprecedented period in our history, or is it to provide them further education to go back to the position that they have and add value to it, or to move forward based on the experience that they have? If you could just share that with me.
Surely. To the chair. Senator Begich again for the record. It's both, and it's what the individual would choose for themselves. When I was going to college, for example, I worked at a bookstore. I was a retail clerk during that time period, and chose to continue to be in that job and not use my education immediately to step away from it. Other people may choose to do the same kind of thing, or they may choose to take advantage of a higher education, as many do, to pursue different career paths. And that, again, is something that we would expect of a person earning a degree, that they would look at all the options available to them. So I think what it really is doing is saying thank you on one part, thank you for the work you did by putting yourself on the line. I think I'm going to ask Ms. Tobin in a moment to talk a little bit about some of the health consequences of our workers. She has some data points I think you might find interesting to further answer your question. But it's not just the thank you. It's then giving the opportunity. One thing we do know is many of our, and that 25% unemployment rate speaks to it, many of these folks who initially helped us, those businesses shut down or closed, and they lost those jobs and were not able to pursue further education or change of job. In some cases, they lost apartments, as we know. And so this bill not only acknowledges that, but acknowledges a path toward success. If you wouldn't mind, Madam Chair, just a few comments from my aide, Luki Tobin.
For the record, this is Luki Tobin with the Office of Senator Begich. I think we've all anecdotally heard about the impact to our essential workers. However, in a recent study published by the Occupational and Environmental Medicine Journal, they showcased that over 20% of grocery store workers had contracted SARS-CoV-2. They also showed that 95% were COVID positive for having direct interaction with customers. The part that really stood out to me was that same study reported 24% of those individuals were experiencing high levels of anxiety and 8% had severe depression. I think it's very clear that this pandemic has had a pretty significant impact on those who've put their lives online and at risk for all of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Stevens and then Senator Begich, I have a follow-up to my first question. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to help me understand this, Senator Begich, so somebody is working as a grocery store clerk, and they intend to apply for this. I'm not quite sure I understand if the date the public emergency declared is repealed on the date the public health emergency is declared by the federal government. Is there a timeline there? Can a person be working in these jobs and then apply? Is this immediate? As soon as the emergency is over, they're no longer able to apply or get those funds?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that was the comment I made earlier, is I want to set a hard date. And what we expect that this public health emergency will likely end sometime between September and December of this year. The idea is that during this year, this calendar year, you would have the chance as an essential worker to then apply. If indeed, for reasons that I hope don't come to pass, this public health emergency were to extend into a further year or a further year, I think I would have to ask us to take it up at that time. But what I'm trying to do here is set a hard date so it's easier for us to predict the cost of the program. But the intent, we do know in Michigan, the number of people that applied, Michigan's a much larger state than Alaska, so when I say 9%, that number is somewhere around most
85,000.
That was Luki Tobin for the record. 85,000 applied. I would guess we probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 5,000 apply in this state. What you're trying to do is say there's a time period for when which you can put your application in that you intend to take advantage of the program, and then you have to act on your application, which is approved by the Post-Secondary Education Commission, and you have up to 4 years to act on that. Ideally, you'll do it for 4 years, complete a degree, and be done. But the idea is that you have to have a hard stop date at some point. And as cruel as that may be at some level, you have to for planning purposes. But I'm more than happy to entertain amendments in the Education Committee that would help me identify a fair and just way of providing the program.
Madam Chair, if I just to comment further, I appreciate that, Senator Begich. I guess my concern is if this were to end in September, a student had been applying and working, they couldn't start their classes at the University of Alaska until January. I mean, there's a time issue there that does cause some problems. So,
Madam Chair, Senator Stevens, through the chair, if they had applied, they'd be fine. They would have applied for the program already, and they could choose to attend a year later if they wished to start their time. The application period is what is limited by the time. Their application to take advantage of the program is the only thing that's limited by the time. And then they have a full 4 years after that deadline to actually complete the use of their application.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Begich.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to start off by thanking Senator Begich for bringing this bill forward. I think it's very important, especially now. But just for clarification for me, so an essential worker can apply for a grant to be a full-time student, half-time student, whatever their decision is, which means that they could probably continue working if they were a half-time student or even a full-time, but the decision is theirs.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, that's correct.
And
what is not included here is we also, of course, have every intent that this be also used for AVTEC. It's not just for college education, but also for your vocational education opportunities.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Begich, does the language in the bill currently allow for an understanding that AVTEC would apply, or is that something that you plan on addressing in a further committee?
To the chair, Senator Begich, for the record, it could. It appears to, but Ledge Legal has asked us to slightly refine the language just to make it abundantly clear that we intend for it also to apply to AVTEC. They believe it does, but they have suggested that we drop a word, I think it's undergraduate, from the bill, and that we would intend to do. It's appropriate that that happen in the Education Committee, and so that's where we would do it. And then, Madam Chair, just to further illustrate that, we've also been asked by Ledge Legal if it is our intent to have it apply to AVTEC, that we should say that numerous times on the record, which I am doing at this point,
okay,
by saying it is intended to apply to AVTEC as well.
Intend to have it apply to AVTEC students.
yes.
Which is the Alaska Vocational Education
Technical College.
Just one more question about the grocery store workers. I keep coming back to the fact that if they have an opportunity to go to school, they'll leave their position. And have you talked to any grocery store managers in Anchorage or in the state about how this bill might impact their workforce?
Madam Chair, to the chair, not directly, but I did speak with, and I think on the line is the incoming director of the AFL-CIO, in particular about food and commercial workers, since most of the grocery stores in Anchorage are represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers, which is an AFL-CIO union. And it was regretfully the head of that union was unable to testify today, but I've been told is supportive of the bill. I would rather defer to Joelle Hall, Director Hall, when it comes to the answer to that question, but it is my understanding that many people that are in retail jobs also, as I mentioned, was my experience anecdotally, also attend college. And so I don't know if this would necessarily move them out of that workforce. What I think it would do is provide them, while in that workforce, an opportunity to choose to move out of that workforce at some point in their lives.
Okay, thank you. And is there any opposition that you're aware of to this bill?
Not that I'm aware of, Madam Chair. Thank you. Tom Begich again for the record.
Thank you. And are there any further questions of committee members? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much, Senator Begich and Lukey, for your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have some invited testimony from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and the university. So I'd like to invite Dan Robinson forward. If you could introduce yourself for the record, and appreciate you meeting with my office earlier just to give us some background for this bill, and appreciate your testimony today. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. Dan Robinson, I'm the research chief at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We produce a lot of the data you see either from us or lots of other places, job numbers, wages, unemployment rates, population estimates detailed. We are policy neutral. You know, the Governor Dunleavy gets the same answer to his questions as Governor Walker did. The questions are different, but our answers are the same. And if you like them or don't, we don't worry too much about that. That's key to understanding who we are. that we're policy neutral and politically free. I think that's a big key to our value to the state, I hope. As Chair Costello mentioned when we talked, one of my questions was what we could do that would be helpful to you. And so three things in talking with Chair Costello that we kind of sorted out. One was to give you just a little bit of insight into where we are in terms of job numbers during the COVID period. So that's one. And the other two are just to point to a couple of resources that we produce, one every year and the other every 2 years, that would be helpful broadly, I hope, as you think about investments from this bill or any bill in Alaska's training and education institutions, the value of that, et cetera. So with that introduction, just looking quickly, here's our job picture. These, to give you a second to get oriented, this is over the year percent change in employment. So from 2014 to the end of 2020.
Dan, I hate to interrupt, but so our members are not able to see the PowerPoint on that screen, but we do have a copy in the binder. So members, feel free to access your copy, and if not, you can also look behind us. So thank you, Dan.
Sure. And if anybody has any clarifying questions, please ask. So over the year percent change in employment. So what we're doing here is looking at the same month from the previous year, so we don't have to worry about seasonality. And what you see, among other things, is that Alaska had a three-year recession from October 2015 to about 3 years later, fourth quarter of 2018. It looks pretty mild when you bring in the COVID line. That plunge is, I mean, quite literally, it was off the charts for us. That has not happened ever in Alaska's history, that kind of a percent drop. That doesn't mean, I worry a little bit that people will think that means this is already worse than the 80s. This is very, very different than the 80s. And when we open back up, the rebound could, and almost certainly will be very different. So, but the drop was unprecedented. And we're coming, you know, when I say we're coming back, part of that is at its worst, the COVID job numbers, we were comparing the summer of 2020 when we had almost no tourism to the year ago levels, which is when Alaska's economy is at its height, at its largest job numbers. So some of that improvement is mostly just because we're comparing to different times of the year. So don't read too much into how much better the numbers look at the far right of that graph compared to how they look this summer. Lots still to be determined about how 2021 pans out. So, and this is just kind of a summary slide of what's happened. The biggest losses by far, by percentage, are in this category called leisure and hospitality. That's gyms, that's restaurants, that's bars, that's concert performance. It's broadly what it sounds like. Second biggest by percentage were oil and gas. And that's an interesting problem for Alaska's economy because what happens with those is more uncertain than what happens with our gym and our bars and our restaurants. And the losses, oil and gas had struggled a little bit and was just starting to claw back some of the jobs it lost before COVID hit. And we lost, so just went from 15,000 oil and gas jobs, dropped to 9, had climbed back to 10. And now we're back below 7,000. So COVID, 3,000 jobs, 100,000 plus per. So oil and gas got hit pretty hard and some uncertainty going forward.
Dan?
Yes.
If I could just ask a question and then see if any members have a question. So is the uncertainty that you talk about, is that because those oil and gas jobs pay more and when people lose them, they perhaps move out of state? Or could you explain your comment about uncertainty, and then are there any members who have a question for him at this point? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Costello. The uncertainty with oil, and my specific reference was more to the fact that COVID shut down restaurants and bars in a different way, and when COVID is mostly behind us, we'll reopen those things, and we hope that the businesses are still able to reopen. There are questions there, but oil, what happens in the coming few years. There's more possibility than there was pre-COVID that they don't bounce back, or that they don't bounce back quickly. This may change the trajectory of oil and gas jobs for a longer period. And part of that's based on what COVID has done to demand business travel. Think of that. How much different might business travel be even when we're done with COVID? People might not jump on planes, and lots of questions about that. But broadly, just there's some different factors than what restaurants and bars and gyms and those things are dealing with. And you know, structural is a big word, but they're more of that type.
Thank you.
Sure. And just the third bullet, every sector except federal government lost jobs. So COVID didn't spare really any part of our economy. And then Alaska's losses were among the more severe among states, Hawaii, New York, Massachusetts. But we were towards the more severe end in terms of the jobs. And our recovery has been a little slower than other states so far. So that's the one task, just a broad look at what our economy is doing during the COVID era. Task two is to point you to this projections, their long-term occupational projections we do every 2 years. And I'm not going to, don't squint to try to understand what this chart shows. It's mostly to make you aware, if you aren't already, that this report exists, where we look in a lot of detail about the types of jobs that are growing and the types of jobs that aren't. And we do some top job compilation, where we look specifically at the jobs that pay better than average and are growing better than average. So if you haven't seen this report, then I hope it will be useful, again, for this type of a legislation, but plenty of others. If you're trying to understand what's happening in our economy, what kinds of jobs are growing, what kinds of jobs aren't.
Dan, for those folks who might be listening online, could you give the title of the report and then briefly describe where, I assume it's online, the
yes.
website or any information, because I think people would be interested in having this as a resource going forward.
Yes, Chair Castillo, very happy to do that. So we publish it in our monthly publication, Alaska Economic Trends. It's usually in October. In this case, it was. So October 2020. We also have a whole lot of detailed information by occupation on our website. And our website, if you Google Alaska Research and Analysis or Alaska Employment Projections, will pop right up. And then I'd be happy to follow up after the committee with kind of specific links of where you can find this report and then some of the associated kind of even more detailed stuff about occupations. Is that sufficient?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And can you talk just briefly about the fact that what I actually believe might be true, which is people oftentimes switch careers throughout their lives, and how does that affect the projections? Are these initial careers that people pursue a degree in and then perhaps move out of that, or, you know, what does that landscape look like?
Sure, Costello, broadly, these are the occupations that people are currently working in, so there are lots of detailed counts. So, and the base year in this most recent one was 2018, so it's who's working then and who we expect to be, numerically, how many people will be in those occupations. But you're right, people move from occupation to occupation frequently. In fact, it's not growth. We call them openings. So they're openings from growth and they're openings from replacement. We tend to focus on growth. What's the hot new type of occupation? Technology, STEM, those kinds of things. But by far the biggest number of openings, which is what job seekers care about, come from replacement. And the biggest part of that replacement is people changing careers, to some degree retiring from their occupations too, because there's always that flow of people leaving because of their age. But in very large numbers, people move around, especially at the lower end, where you don't have a lot of specific training requirements. So all kinds of, I mean, some people will work 10 different type occupations in 2 or 3 years.
And that's a comment. It is reassuring to see that lawyers are declining. Maybe they'll cut down on the lawsuits against us.
One other thing you see there is old-fashioned media is really declining. And on the positive side, you see, I mean, the very these are very small occupations, 1, 2, and 3. But it's fun for me. I hope it's fun for everybody. But that number one is marijuana. So that's, again, very small numbers. But the growth, marijuana. Number two is an interesting combination of mining and brewing. So it's an occupation where you study the suspension of solids in liquid. So there are people who do that work for mining, for to get the gold or the silver or whatever else, and then also in brewing. The third one I think was something seafood processing related. But again, we have other compilations where the big numbers are registered nurses. Some of the things that we hear, teachers, a lot more often. So moving on, this second resource I wanted to point to, this one we do every year, and we just released it in the last few weeks. This looks at the lots of detail, the non-residents, people who are not residents by the permanent fund dividend criteria. So that's a strict criteria. You have to be here for a full calendar year before you're eligible. But those people who are working in Alaska, again, conceptually, that's important because these are jobs that people are coming to Alaska to work and presumably, to a degree, and there are lots of nuances, taking those wages home. So jobs our economy is generating, but our citizens, our residents, are not benefiting from. And this is don't squint here. This is just a sample page. This looks at construction, and we show historically what the trends are, specifically by occupation, where the non-resident, what the percentages are, how much in wages is being paid to non-residents. And that's all that I had, and I'd be glad to answer any questions or move along so you can move along.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a real quick question. For occupations who decline the most, what's a faller? I've never heard that term before.
Yeah, that's timber term.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But what is it?
Somebody cuts down trees.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah,
makes them fall.
Makes sense.
Any other questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you for your time today. I found it very interesting. And, I assume that non-resident report is also available on your website.
Yes, on our website. And it was actually, I think it went out to all the legislators in an email. And again, non-resident workers in Alaska, it'll pop right up in a Google search.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Next, we invite James Harvey, also from the Department of Labor, to provide information about the department's activities. Go ahead and take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is back on the record, and before us we have James Harvey with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. You're the Assistant Director of the Division of Employment and Training Services. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, the committee. Again, my name is James Harvey. I'm an assistant director with the Division of Employment and Training Services for the State of Alaska Department of Labor. In essence, I oversee the job centers in the state of Alaska, the operations that go on in those job centers, the programs that we deliver to the citizens of Alaska. I believe this is in your packet as well. The first slide up, or second slide rather, is a map just showing the locations of our 14 job centers that we have currently located throughout the state. Our job centers are run primarily through what's called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA in our terms. And really it's a foundational partnership amongst many different programs, 18 actually required programs, that form the one-stop system. The Department of Labor and operates essentially 11 of those 18 required programs. And so as such, we have a pretty big driving force with the operations of the job centers throughout the state. in our job centers, we have staff through the Division of Employment and Training Services, plus other partner staff that may be present if they're co-located. And really the approach that we take in providing services is a tiered approach. You'd almost view it as a triangle where the base services are provided to most applicants, most individuals that need help, need basic career services. In a job center, really what we're looking at are things like resume assistance, application assistance, interviewing assistance, things of that nature. Throughout last fiscal year, we provided these types of service to over 75,000 individuals in the state. The next level that we really look at is the individualized services structure or tier, and then into the training services. And that's really meant for Alaskans that are experienced a skill or a credential barrier. We assess them, we work one-on-one with them through our staff, often called case managers. I like to call them experts. And we develop what's called an individual employment plan. That plan is that client or that customer's roadmap to suitable employment. And they can include things like funding to assist the individual with training. So it could be training for a credential, training for a skills upgrade, training to AvTech, training to another provider that might provide CDL training, or training at the University of Alaska. The other thing that really is in a companion with that is that most individuals, when they're seeking the training, they also need some other assistance. They have other barriers in life. And we treat every single one as an individual, and we address their barriers individually. And see, the other piece of where we might come in and fund an individual would be with supportive services while they're in training, to help them while they are in training. And then, of course, job placement assistance after that is completed. When we're looking at the job training and placement assistance to individuals, we look at traditional training, training for credentials, which we kind of covered, on the job training, which might be a structured plan that we develop with an employer. And really where that can come to a great benefit is if we develop a registered apprenticeship with that employer and that individual to create a credential training program that's unique to that individual and unique to that employer. But yet it gets to a solid, nationally recognized credential through the United States Department of Labor Office of Apprenticeship. We also work in several areas where we're doing either outreach or inreach with many different populations. One that we've noted on the slide here is inreach to the various prison system or prison locations in the state of Alaska, correctional facilities, working with individuals pre-release as they're getting ready to release and return to society, making sure that they understand what we're there to do to help them with, and then post-release, engaging with them at the job center site or now electronically to ensure that they have the full support needed to get their employment plan in progress, making sure that they understand how to best approach ways in interviews and things of that nature. We're moving on to slide 4. Also, the largest component, I think, of what we do in the job center system is working with employers, because without employers, we don't have job opportunities. We work with employers through a number of ways, primarily through our Alaska job system. Last year and for years prior, you might know that at the ALEXIS, the Alaska Labor Exchange System. We've recently revamped that and gone to a new version called Alaska Jobs. And that acts as first and foremost our primary labor exchange for employers and job seekers to match up and to have that exchange of labor occur. But it's also grown, the system's been growing in capability. So we're starting to find where we can make those connections to individuals and really work with them on the services that they need to be successful in that labor exchange process or that growth process or that training to credential process. With employers also, we work with job fairs and individual employer recruitment sessions. The last large one that we had, we actually moved our veterans career fair that's typically done in November of each year. We do that in Anchorage in the Midtown area. And this last year, we just could not do that in person. And so we moved that online in a virtual format, and we did it over a number of weeks to allow opportunities for employers and other service agencies be able to connect with veterans and eligible spouses throughout the whole process. And so we've done that not only for that sector, but also for many other employment opportunities that might occur.
Senator Reback?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious, is that program run through the federal grants called DVOPs and Leavers, commonly referred to, or is that something separate?
Through the Chair, Senator Reback, that is in conjunction with our DVOPs and Leavers, and our Disabled Veterans Outreach Program specialists and our local Veterans Employment Representative. They reside in the job centers, and it's through a federal grant called the Jobs for Veterans State Grant. And so we use those staff to do the majority of that connection. In fact, in this case, with that particular job fair last November and every year prior, our leaver would do the majority of the outreach to the businesses, because that's their task, is to connect employers and make sure they understand the benefits of hiring a veteran. And so it is also leveraged heavily by our other major federal funding, which is called the Wagner-Peiser Act funding, that covers the scope of employment services to include veterans as well.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Senator Reback.
Yeah, thank you for that. Is there any sort of report on the details of these programs and how they're implemented by the Department of Labor that's made public, or is there an annual report on these programs that you do?
Through the Chair, Senator Reback, we do put together, in conjunction with our Alaska Workforce Investment Board, we put together what's called the annual report for WIOA. And these activities would be covered in that report annually, possibly not to the degree that you might be seeking, but we'd have to take a look at that.
And Madam Chair, if I could.
Senator Reback.
I would be very interested in a report on the details of the implementation of those programs over the last couple years, if I could, Madam Chair. Maybe the committee, I think it's interesting topic. I'd be very interested if I could. Maybe we could get those details.
That'd be great. Mr. Harvey, I was thinking too, if the committee not only could get sort of a report that Senator Reback is looking for, but also just a list of what the department offers for veterans and contact information, so that when we are approached by constituents or in our e-newsletters or what have you, we have that information at our fingertips. Thank you, Senator Reback, for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you.
Okay. To continue on through the Chair, further on down with these employer services, we talk about things like registered apprenticeship, which we've covered, hiring incentives such as bonding and tax credits. Those are to cover barriers to employment such as Fidelity Bonding Program, Work Opportunity Tax Credit, and there's also the Alaska Veteran Employment Corporate Tax Credit that's out there for employers to apply for. In addition to that, Rapid Response, which is our way to work with businesses that might be undergoing a closure. We want to promote the economic recovery and vitality, to identify, plan for, and respond to layoffs as much as possible, and in the best way, prevent or minimize the impact on workers, the businesses, and communities. And in those rapid response activities that we do, we make sure to work with the unemployment insurance program so that individuals are first attached to that type of a benefit, and then next attach with rapid deployment back into the workforce. We do have a little bit of information on veteran services. All of our programs through the United States Department of Labor do give priority to our nation's veterans. And then to speak to Senator Reback's questions on our DVOPs and Leavers, where we have those located right now, we have two half-time positions in Fairbanks, four half-time positions in Anchorage, two half-time positions in Mat-Su coming on board, and we have one full-time leaver, which is that local veterans employment representative that deals primarily with employer relationships. Next slide is slide five. The Division of Employment and Training Services administers several different types of programs aimed at providing workforce training to individuals. They can be split into two major categories. One would be those that are delivered through grantees and those that are delivered through the job center system. Those top two that we see here, the Alaska Adult Education Program and the Senior Community Service Employment Program, which in our state is called MAST, or Mature Alaskans Seeking Skills Training. Those are delivered primarily through grantees throughout the state and covering different regions of the state. Further on down, we have Trade Adjustment Assistance, which is a federal program. Of course, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, both adult and dislocated worker program, and the incumbent worker program, and the State Training and Employment Program for individuals. The focus that I'd like to bring today would be on those federal funded programs that we have, and primarily those delivered through the job centers, which are both our WIOA adult and dislocated worker programs. They play a key role in helping Alaskans to secure self-sufficient employment. Both of the programs, both the adult program and the dislocated worker program, have that same service structure that we discussed earlier. Basic career services, individualized career services, training services, which includes the development of an individual employment plan, and potentially support services while they're in training, and then, of course, follow-up services that are required through the federal programs. And we'll get a little bit deeper, just real quick, into adult and dislocated worker. But in a nutshell, the adult program focuses on individuals with barriers to employment, while the dislocated worker program is designed primarily to assist workers affected by a business closure or layoff. Both programs really look at 104 weeks total within a training program of type, and that would be to obtain a certification, credential, diploma, etc. upon completion, so that employment is an immediate expectation thereafter. Next slide is slide 7. The adult program helps to improve the quality of the adult workforce, again, increasing the self-sufficiency through employment. And the program itself enables the staff to provide job search assistance and training opportunities to individuals that meet program eligibility. These program eligibility points aren't all-encompassing. They are meant to be in general. Age 18 or older, they're in need of workforce services, training, or retraining to secure unsubsidized employment. And, of course, priority is given to veterans, low-income individuals, individuals who are basic skills deficient, and recipients of public assistance. The next major federal program that we work with is the Dislocated Worker Program underneath the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, primarily designed to help workers get back to work as quickly as they can or as quickly as possible and overcome barriers to employment when they become dislocated. Essentially job loss, mass layoffs, possibly global trade dynamics, which you might see in the case of the Trade Act program, or different transition in economic sectors. This program helps individuals, as soon as we can, rapidly reenter the workforce. The general program eligibility for individuals in this situation would be unemployed or have lost their job through no fault of their own. And, of course, veterans receive priority of service in this program as well. Just generally contact how to get in touch with the Alaska Job Center system, the staff there that can help the individual, your constituents, online at www.jobs.alaska.gov. That will bring inquires to a main page that we have there and give them links to several different programs that we operate, including the Jobs for Veterans program, but also primarily to the Alaska Jobs system. And that's a system where they need to log in through MyAlaska, establish an account, potentially put up a resume, and they can start to match to employment opportunities right away. They can also individually contact our job centers through their email addresses. They can contact job centers through our toll-free number, 877-724-2539. And then at our 14 physical locations, pending our COVID phase reopening plans. And lastly, my contact information, for any further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harvey. Are there any questions of the committee members? Okay, thank you very much. Seeing none, appreciate your time today, and we'll let you know if we have any further questions. Just to let the committee know what the plan forward is, we've got Louise Dean, the Executive Director of Workforce Development, and then Terry Cothran is online for questions. She's the University of Alaska Associate Vice President of Workforce Development. And following that, if there are any questions for her, we'll move into public testimony with the intent to close it today and move the bill out. So with that in mind, when we do get to public testimony, if those testifying could keep your remarks brief, but we do definitely want to hear what you have to say. So with that, Louise Dean, please feel free to provide comments.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello and members of the committee. My name is Louise Dean. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. The AWIB has multiple funding sources to provide support and training programs.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello and members of the committee. My name is Louise Dean. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board.
So I think we're going to take a brief at ease, Louise. We're hearing a repeat of your comments. So we'll take a brief at ease while we figure out the technical issues. So the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee has come back to order, and we are going to hear from Louise Dean with the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. Louise?
Thank you. I have music on my... Thank you.
We're going to take a brief at ease. This committee is called back to order. I think we'll give it one more try, Louise, and if not, then if we could have your testimony in writing, and I'll make sure that the committee gets a copy, and the bill sponsor, of course, can have it for the bill as it moves through. So go ahead, Louise, and we'll give it one more try. Okay, thank you, Louise, for being available. I think we'll accept your testimony in writing, and we'll make sure we share that with the committee members. Also, for the committee, Terry Cothran is online for any questions. Are there any questions for Terry before we move into public testimony? Okay, seeing none, we are now opening public testimony on Senate Bill 10, and I'm going to ask Mike Coons from Palmer to provide your comments on the bill. And then next I will go to Santa Efford with the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Mike?
Yes, thank you, Senator Costello. This is Mike Coons, and I'm speaking for myself. I have several issues with SB 10, and thus I cannot support it. I have read the listed, quote, essential workers definitions. Just this alone where I have a large amount of heartburn. We've been using essential workers throughout this pandemic where a relatively small number of people are given a higher status than the larger majority of workers within the state, not to mention nationally. We've had attempts to make essential workers to get the vaccine over those seniors in the highest risk of the virus. Now we want to give grants to essential workers, but disregarding all the other lessons that are just as essential. As the low income that the sponsor discussed, these are those in this bill that are working and drawing the paycheck. Then we have the so-called non-essential workers who now are the new low income and new poor. This is upside down and potentially discriminatory. From the first testimony on jobs, the comment was about how COVID has impacted. But sadly, the biggest impact has been from local governments such as Anchorage that used the virus to shut down the so-called non-essential which is small businesses versus box stores. We now have a Congress and a president that now want to forgive $50,000 in student loans, not to mention all the other spending. Where is that money coming from? Taxpayers. Now we want to give grants to a select few, and where, pray, is that money coming from when our state is overdrawn in our savings and spending money like money grows on trees? Bottom line is we have to get our economy back on track, get all Alaskans back to full employment, not just a few. We need to get teachers back to teaching. We need to get small businesses back up and running, not just box stores. I ask to vote no on SB10. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate, as always, that you follow the legislature and are willing to testify, and the sponsors here taking notes. So I'm sure he'll take some of your questions to the next committee. Next, Saina Efford, the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education.
Good afternoon, committee members.
For the record, my name is Saina.
Okay, we're going to take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We're having a little bit of technical issues with the sound. So, Ms. Elford, if you could try again, and if we get this high-pitched buzzing noise, which we had previously, I'll just move on to the next person, and we'll ask you to provide your comments in writing. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Saina Efford. I'm Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, and I was actually on the line just for questions. I do not have public comment, but I was available for any questions for the committee.
Oh, okay, thank you. Are there any questions for the Director of the Postsecondary Education Commission? So there's no, Senator Stevens.
Madam President, just congratulations to Ms. Efford. We've known her in the Department of Education. Really pleased she's at postsecondary education now. She's just taken over recently in the last few months. So glad you're with us.
Through the chair, thank you so much, Senator Stevens. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens and Ms. Efford. Next, Joelle Hall, the Director of Operations for the Alaska AFL-CIO.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joelle Hall, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alaska AFL-CIO. The Alaska AFL-CIO represents 60,000 workers in a variety of fields, and I'm proud to say that many of our members have answered the call and have been working very hard during this pandemic. First responders, hospital personnel, state employees, grocery store workers, and many more that have worked under difficult conditions, allowing many of us to hunker down. While we represent many types of frontline workers, there are many that do not yet benefit from a collective bargaining agreement, child care workers, some delivery drivers, personal care attendants, to name a few, important jobs that make the gears of our economy turn. We've learned a lot during this pandemic, but I hope one thing that sticks in our collective memories and in our hearts is without child care and grocery store workers, we're all in deep trouble. I want to thank Senator Begich for introducing this bill. As was stated earlier, this pandemic has resulted in huge job losses. As a community, we're going to need to do everything we can to get Alaskans back to work. One way to make a big difference is training. Providing training and opportunities to build a better life for our families is the cornerstone of the work that the labor movement does. A market economy is always enhanced when workers are afforded easy access to affordable training. This bill would reward many who have given so much with a gift that helps them and their families. But as was noted in the sponsor statement, better trained workers help employers as well. So this bill seems like a win-win for workers and their current or future employers. This is a good idea that will help so many people who have given so much. We're in full support of this bill and look forward to its passage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joelle. I really appreciate you making yourself available today. With that, is there anyone else here in Juneau or online that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 10? Okay. I do want to mention that the bill has a Finance Committee referral, so we will not be reviewing the fiscal note in this committee. So are there any final comments that the sponsor has or questions that the members have? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Senator Tom Begich, for the record, just I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to hear this bill. I'm pleased that it's the first bill that your committee has heard, and I look forward to its wonderful vetting in the Education Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Begich, and I will now close public testimony on Senate Bill 10. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move and ask unanimous consent to move Senate Bill 10 out of committee with recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 10? Okay, seeing none, so moved. We will take a brief at ease as the members sign the committee documents before we move on to Senator Wilson, Senate Bill 24. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 24, introduced by Senator Wilson. The committee does end at 3, and so I do see that we have three individuals signed up for public testimony and then several individuals online for questions. So as soon as the sponsor introduces his bill, we will move directly into public testimony. Then close public testimony, and the intention is to hold this bill until for further consideration by the committee with possible amendments from the bill sponsor. So with that, Senator Wilson, and please feel free to introduce your aide.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Senator David Wilson, Senator for District D, and with me is Ms. Jasmine Martin, legislative staff and my economic advisor to my office. Senate Bill 24 is an act that would authorize virtual meetings of shareholders, corporations, and basically members of nonprofit corporations. As we've all experienced the past year, and we've all been sort of having virtual meetings through Zoom, Teams, and other platforms through this pandemic and through this unprecedented year, this has caused a lot of hardships, but also a lot of innovation. It's imperative that we use this innovation to improve the operations of our future laws and be able to help business continue to thrive and be vital. So basically, again, this bill allows the corporation shareholder meetings and nonprofits to have these electronic meetings. We can go through a quick sectional, but the amendments coming forth were just by folks that have contacted our office to make sure that we're inclusive enough, because the last disaster declaration didn't really make clear on the organizational meetings, voting by proxy, and so we just want to provide more clarity and some more definitions into this bill to make sure that we give all the business and the corporations of Alaska the tools they need to conduct this. And this would allow boards and corporations, it's not automatic, they have to change their bylaws and vote this in, it's not a standard blanket waiver for all meetings to happen. Their shareholders or corporations would have to verify and change this. And with that, I'll turn it over for a quick sectional.
Thank you very much, Senator Wilson.
Senator Jasmine.
One day.
That's no. Okay. We are the Jobs and Economy Committee. If you want to improve your...
I skipped a couple words there. Senator Costello and members of the Senate Labor Commerce Committee, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson, and Senator Wilson introduced the bill very well. Again, it is not a requirement that the boards would meet virtually, but they would be allowed to. And I can do a quick sectional.
Thank you, Jasmine.
Section 1 is basically conforming to Section 2, so it allows for the changes made in Section 2. Section 2 amends AS 10-6405 to add a new section, which would allow shareholders for for-profit corporations to meet electronically as allowed by bylaws. And then Section 3 is basically conforming to Section 4. And Section 4 amends AS 21-061. To add a new section to allow members of nonprofit organizations to meet electronically as allowed by the organization's bylaws. And then Section 5 is just essentially transition language. It makes it easier for corporations that have very specific notification requirements to change that notification, so when this bill becomes effective, they can change those notifications and make sure that they don't have to notice a meeting that's going to happen in person and then change it to virtual. So, and with that, we can answer any questions or go to public testimony.
Are there any questions of committee members? I do have one question. Is this legislation similar to a particular section in the governor's disaster declaration, Senate Bill 56?
Yes, and it is actually modeled off of the disaster declarations, and that's one of the reasons that it needs to be changed, in our opinion, is because that was created very quickly in response to the disaster, and we just like the language to be a little bit more clean.
Okay, thank you. So online for questions, we have Catherine Fagerstrom, the Supervisor of Corporation and Professional Licensing with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Also with the department, we have Sharon Walsh, who's the Deputy Director of the Division. We have Julia Kim with Upiakvik Inupiat Corporation for questions. She's in Barrow. And then first to testify, we have Delvert Rexford, followed by Sienna Caruso, followed by Bonnie Paskvan, and then Patricia Fisher. So with that, I'd like to invite Delvert Rexford to provide your brief public testimony. So Delvert, we're unable to hear you. I will now move on to Sienna Caruso, and we'll circle back to see if you're available after we go through the other individuals who are testifying. Sienna? Okay, we'll go ahead now and see if Bonnie Paskvan is online. Bonnie, with Dorsey and Whitney. Okay, Patricia Fisher, I show that you're online.
Okay, we'll go ahead now and see if Bonnie Paskvan is online. Bonnie, with Dorsey.
We'll take a brief at ease for technical difficulties. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is back online.
Sienna, can you hear me? Yes, I can. Okay.
So we do hear a voice. Could the person identify themselves and provide your public testimony?
Technical difficulties. Yes, that much is clear. I see on the screen they're at ease. Yes. Okay. So we have no idea. They closed out the other one, it sounds like, then, if they're to me.
So if those who are calling into the committee could mute your phones, we are going to keep public testimony open until Wednesday's meeting. We are having a little technical difficulties here, and I apologize for the inconvenience. I did want to mention that Errol Champion with the Alaska Association of Realtors was online earlier, and there is a letter that was provided by the association, a letter in support. And then with that, I would like to offer Senator Gray Jackson an opportunity to ask a question. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to take up too much time, but just for clarity for me, so right now, state law needs to change in order for corporations and nonprofits to meet virtually. Aren't they already meeting virtually because of COVID?
Yes. For the record, this is Senator David Wilson. Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, currently that would end February 14th if we do not extend another disaster declaration. So through the emergency declaration that's been extended, they can do that. This would just make it in perpetuity that folks can continue to conduct business this way.
Okay. If I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Yeah, this is a little education for me because I had no idea that that was a regulation by in state statute. So this is like an education for me, and I really appreciate this. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I appreciate the question, Senator Wilson. I also appreciate that as we move into a COVID-aware legislature, that instead of using the powerful emergency powers, that we actually put into law some of the things that have allowed Alaskans to continue on with their lives and make important decisions, especially in relation to this bill. So that is something that I think should be clear to the public, is that this bill is putting into state statute something that was allowed during the emergency declaration that has worked for Alaska, and it makes sense to allow for them to change their bylaws if they like, and in order to meet online. So I appreciate you introducing this bill, and with that, I want to thank the committee members, congratulate Senator Holland for serving as our vice chair, and love that we have two members returning, and we have two new members. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 10th at 1:30 in the same room. We will be hearing Senate Bill 56 pending referral, and we will be hearing this bill again if the sponsor is ready for the new version. So with that, thank you very much, everyone, and we are adjourned.